This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Racket Magazine podcast is brought to you by Sergio Tacchini, offering iconic tracksuits, classic polos, and the new Youngline sneaker. Originally designed in the mid-1980s, it's our favorite spring silhouette, and it's back. You can get it now at sergiotacchini.com and follow them on Instagram at sergiotacchini_official for updates. Enter the promo code RACKETMAG at checkout, and you'll get 30% off your order.
Maybe help somebody with my amazing advices about life.
Snubs. This week's guest is Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. Pretty good, right?
Oh, did you practice that?
I did, because I was editing the audio and I thought she deserved a really A-plus effort from me.
She got one. She got one. Well done. That was impressive. I'm super impressed. I just call her Nastya.
Nastya Pavs, as she goes by on Instagram. What a character.
She's awesome, right? You know, the great thing about doing these pods for me, and just like with everything that we always talk about, like when I do post-match interviews or I do an interview in general, I always just try and hope that their regular personality comes out when they're doing a post-match interview, or like it's their moment, right? It's their 90 seconds often after a match to show who they really are, because you still don't get to really see them in press. You get the written word down in a newspaper article, but you don't really get to see them as people. And, you know, my goal and our goal with this, you know, with the Racket Magazine podcast is to actually have them 45 minutes, show a little bit of who they are. And I think we're happy to say that we heard and we got a lot of Nastya today with her just honesty about her life, about her coaching situation, about the things that she likes, the things that she doesn't like, and, you know, being obviously in quarantine right now with her family.
Great ideas about what to do with her career after she's done. But she's far from done because she still has some very, very big goals. One thing I've learned kind of all season, I would not survive a day in Russia. It is tough there. Like, no thanks.
Yeah. Well, I think we, you know, obviously we had Svetlana Kuznetsova and we had Aryna Sabalenka, but they definitely had different sort of mindsets a little bit. Sabalenka's father, you know, seemed to be quite a very good positive in her life, like, and really built her up. She didn't really believe in herself, but the bottom line tone to a lot of Russian tennis players is there's not a lot of like happy sort of like everything's great. You're a 10 out of 10. Like, you're like, you win a slam, you're a 6 because you could have been a 10. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, nothing's really good enough.
Not enough.
No, I mean, I spoke to Daria Gavrilova the other day just on an Insta live, and the same thing, you know, and she's obviously living and is now Australian. And so she has that juxtaposition as well in her personality. Because one of the things she said is it's not really good enough in Russia. That's the biggest difference. And we've seen it now. Really, it's a theme for all the Russians.
Yeah. Well, better them than me, because Nastya has handled it. She's turned into a hilariously funny person, also a leader on the WTA tour. And somebody who's turned in some really, really great performances, hopefully more to come when we get back to the course.
Yeah, she had her best result in Australia. She had her best result in Australia in January. So, you know, at slam level. And, you know, she was probably looking forward to this year and really getting it going. But she's had an interruption with COVID-19 and also now looking to change coaches. So it's going to be very interesting when she comes back, but you and I will definitely be there to support her. And I hope everybody is, because she's a great chick. She's super, super nice. As you said, she's on the board of the WTA Players Council now. And so she really takes her best interest in what's happening with the sport. And we love her.
Hey, welcome to the Racquet Magazine podcast. And today, I'm not only joined by my co-host, finally, Caitlin Thompson, but also by Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. Okay, say the name correctly for everybody so they know.
Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova.
Okay. Thanks for that. I'll remember that next time I do one of your matches.
That's the Russian pronunciation, but you said it really, really good.
Oh, thanks.
A little bit of experience, I guess.
Thanks, buddy.
During the matches.
This is crazy times. Let's start with that, because obviously we're not sure whenever we play our podcast, because we call them evergreen, meaning that we can play them at any time. But it's kind of tough for us to be able to talk to you today without talking about the fact that we're all sitting on our computers in other parts of the world. You are in Moscow.
Yeah.
Because of COVID-19, coronavirus, and it's been an unbelievably crazy time. What have you been up to?
Yeah, it's been absolutely crazy, because first of all, it took me by shock when we all arrived. I started from there when we arrived in Indian Wells, and because I'm on the player council as well. And then I will never forget that day when I was practicing, and then one of our board members came to my practice, and I'm like, what is she doing? Like, since when is she watching my practice? But like, I'm okay, you know. And then she grabbed me directly to the meeting, and then we sit there, and I'm completely shocked. Like, I didn't expect that one of the biggest events on tour is going to get canceled because of that, because I guess nobody really took it that serious, you know, that situation. Because at first, of course, everybody was aware that there is a virus out there, but how bad it is, nobody knew. Okay, we had a few cases back there and there, and you know. So then why I started from there, because I felt completely lost and in Indian Wells, because I was like, well, I'm absolutely totally not prepared for this.
What was that meeting like? Because I remember being there, of course, with Sam Stoza. And obviously we were hearing things, but, you know, Sam was playing quali. So the night before quali started, Sam text messaged me and she goes, I'm hearing things that they may cancel this tournament. And I was like, you got to be kidding. There's no way. I mean, we just couldn't mentally go there, you know? So I want to know from your perspective, because you're on the council, what were those meetings like?
Well, first of all, because nobody was prepared for this, so it was completely out of nowhere for everybody. So as I said, like, she grabbed me, one of the board members grabbed me from my practice, and then she said, well, there is emergency. And do you know how many things went through my head? I thought, okay, somebody died. Tournament director died, or something happened. I don't know. Is there a bomb on center court? I'm like, what the hell is going on? You know. So I had hundreds of different scenarios in my head. What is the emergency? And then once I got to the meeting, all the girls were already there. And then obviously Tommy Haas came in, and so they started to explain that they had a few cases in Indian Wells, and because it's a resort, they don't have enough hospitals to accommodate in case a lot of, you know. And so, yeah, it was absolutely a shocking situation. So they said, but I first thought they discussing whether to postpone or cancel, but then they go like, no, it's not happening. And I you know, it took me days to actually realize that. And so I was like, I don't know. We were all waiting for Miami, but if Indian Wells got canceled in how Miami is going to happen, you know, that's like, and then NBA were also thinking to cancel their league and stuff. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do without tennis. I'm lost. Like, I don't know. I don't have a plan B. I'm not prepared for this. And what is actually amazing, I've never been injured for a long period of time.
Lucky you.
Well, like, exactly. that's a good thing to have. But at the same time, like, I'm 28 and I don't know. I've never stopped more than, let's say, off season, like 6 weeks of tennis. So I'm like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with my time now. And, you know, but slowly I'm getting into this new routines and I'm also enjoying it, trying to find new things.
Well, I want to ask you a lot about that because your social media has been amazing to watch. You've done obviously a lot on your own account. You've done some for the WTA. Talk to us about what that new routine looks like. As far as I can tell, there's a lot of baking. There's a lot of going to your sauna, which makes me extremely jealous. It's also kind of snowy in Moscow. What's your day-to-day been like?
People tell me, oh, you've got a big personality and you're very funny and creative and stuff like that. So you can use a little bit more of that because most of the time I try to stay low-key and just hit the tennis ball and play tennis, you know. Like all my friends, they know how I can be like really hilarious and I like that. But we don't have, it's like different mentality in Russia. We don't used to like show off and show everything. In my family, my mom would be always like, no, Nastya, please don't do it. She's like, she's this like innocent angel. Like we're completely different with her. I'm like, the other day I was wearing my Christmas pants to the supermarket and she's like, Nastya, we're in April. And I'm like, so what? You know, like the way I dress up as well, me and my brother, we have this different view at things. So, I was doing this couple of WTA takeovers and for Russian Tennis Federation, turned out to be fun. And so then I'd done a live on WTA with Bethany Mattek-Sands, because we discussed the, I just recently went like baby pink with my hair, so.
Yeah, I'm noticing that it's the tone, it's toned down a little bit, the hair, because we actually can see you because we're on Zoom video right now. What do you think about it? You going to do that again when you come back on tour?
I've done it a couple of times before, but been a while ago, and because I'm very like, low-key, nobody noticed me. That's why you don't remember. No, but anyway, this is how I am. And it's just like lately, I don't care. I don't mind what people think. Like if they don't like my style because I wear those SpongeBob socks, if they don't like it, that's fine with me because I like SpongeBob and I'm going to wear those socks. So that's, for example, with my Christmas pants in April, okay? So
Wait, do you wear the Christmas pants with the SpongeBob socks to the supermarket?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm with you on that one. I'm all good with that.
Since you've found a little bit more of an overt presentation, I'm sitting here looking at your baby pink hair. We've got some tattoos in the camera. When tennis resumes, you might come back with a bit more of a high key personality. Does this make you kind of reassess, you know, your persona a little bit and how much you show people?
You know what? Like, I don't force this. This is something that's how I am. And I don't need to make something extra to show to people. Like, I just like the tattoos. I like to dress up. I love fashion, but in a, also my special way. I like pink hair. And so when I do it, if people see that and from time to time I post a picture or a video of that, that's fine with me, you know, and I don't mind if they like it or not. If they judge me, that's fine because I like this, so I'm sorry. just don't watch it, like don't follow me, you know.
It's actually Nastya, one of the things that I wrote down that I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, you are pretty low-key, as you say, on the court. You sort of go about your business. But I know you, and I also know that kind of fun, different side of you. I guess, you know, is it something that has changed through the years leaving Russia and traveling and being around people of other cultures? Is that what sort of changed that a little bit in you, or is that what you've always been like off of the tennis court?
Yeah, good question. That could be because, because every time I go back to Russia, first of all, even my parents and like people, they ask me where I'm from because I speak Russian with an accent. And I'm like, and I speak English with an accent and I speak French with an accent. So I'm like, okay.
Give me a break.
Yeah, so I'm a child of the world. And I think because, I basically left Russia when I was 13. First, I was in Czech Republic. And then from like 15, I was in France. Then I was a bit in Spain. And of course, I travel a lot. So I guess I picked up a little bit of everything and seen, like you said, hundreds of different cultures. And I guess this like style and personality, and I started to care a little less because I think Russian people be more they more closed. Yeah. And like I said, when growing up, like I always been like that, but then I had to always tone it down because mm-hmm. you know, my parents or some people, they would
society.
Be like, oh, that's a little
society.
That's a little, exactly. That's a little too much, you know. And my older brother, he's like full of tattoos, he's very tall, and like he also like to express himself, but here like it wasn't good to do it because people would look at you like, whoa, like it's not right. Mm-hmm. Always this judgment.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get into tennis?
So I was my older brother started playing. My dad was coaching him. So my whole family was in tennis, and then I was like 4 or 5 and I picked up the racket because I was always around them, started to hit against the wall. And then like when I was 6, they saw some potential there, and it started to become a bit more serious.
It sounds like from what you're talking about, you and your brother still have a ton of similarities. It sounds like you guys are very close. Is that the case? Is he involved in any way with your tennis? Does he come or travel with you, or has he visited you when you've been in some of these far-flung places?
No, not at all. Like, he doesn't care at all, actually. And I always get pissed because he's very distant, actually. Like, tough to explain. We are really close when we see each other and we spend time. But once we separate, like, sometimes we don't call each other or don't text each other for a month. But I know he's fine. He knows I'm fine. He's, of course, following my, like, results. He always said, like, congrats, and that's it, pretty much. He wouldn't want to travel he's very special. Like, he's from another planet for sure.
Special or special bad or special
special, but in my world it's special good because I like different people. I think everybody is very special in a way. We all have different personalities, and everybody has something. And I think it's better this way to have this something extra spicy, because I don't like when people are just boring and simple and, you know, so.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody would describe you as boring. I was talking to Radka, our photographer, who got to do a photo shoot with you at Indian Wells in those weird days when nobody knew what to do. And she was like, Nastya has so much personality. We had so much fun on the shoot. And it was so great because I hope the photos that she took will, you know, sort of help tell that story a little bit.
It was one of my favorite photo shoots because you feel right away the energy and how creative she is. Because like as soon as she came in my house, like you could tell she see things like in a different way. Like, for example, she would be like looking at that wall there, and it's like a regular wall, and she's like, right, okay, you sit there. It's like she sees something already, like something is happening. So I had just a simple yellow shorts and something, and then the waters turn out amazing. Like, she made it so creative, and I love those pictures and the photo shoot and the energy we had. And it took like 15 minutes, 1 hour.
and amazing.
Speaking of energy, and you've spoken about like kind of how important that is, right? You feel that with your friends, you feel that with people you're working with. So I guess something that's happened over the last like few weeks since Indian Wells is that you have stopped working with Sam Sumac. So you've got now approximately probably 6 more months to find a new coach, because God knows when we're going to be back on the tennis court. I mean, let's face it, we don't know, right? This is very much a big unknown. But, you know, here's your opportunity to sort of set the record straight a little bit. What happened there? Because you were obviously having great results, you know, made a final of Japan. I think the first week you started working together, but, you know, that's also like a lot of work you'd already done. And then obviously Australian Open had a great run there. But so what happened there?
Yeah. I'll just make a little joke, because I made a funny video with the filter where I look like super old, you know, and I make an announcement, my retirement announcement, that guys, I'm thank you all for the support. I really appreciate it. But because of the lockdown, we're in 2026 now and we still can start. You know, I just hope it's not going to happen, because I don't want to, that's not how I wanted to stop my career. So, you know, anyways, it was pretty funny. Talking of Sam, so first of all, when I hired him, I was in that kind of bad moment in my career last year and the year before, because I wasn't sure. I guess I had like a burnout or something, because I came to the point where I wasn't enjoying tennis anymore. I had some personal stuff, of course, and I wasn't sure what I'm going to do, because I couldn't find the right process with my team. Couldn't find the right team, and the results wasn't there, the ranking that I expected. So everything, like, you know. And so when I hired Sam, because he's very well known on the tour, he's got great results with previous players. So I thought, okay, I need this extra little like extra push and
experience.
He seemed like experienced coach, exactly. You know, and like the coach that experience I ever had before in the past. And so I thought, you know, this is going to give me this push, and I need this discipline that I used to have ages ago when I was working with my dad. He was super strict. So I guess I missed that, you know. And I think just also that gave me this a little push, and, you know, results came in after US Open. But I just don't want to forget that I did a lot of work with Rob Steckley just before the US Open. He was helping me, and he took me in this like really bad condition. And
Rob was a former coach of Lucy Safarova, Denis Shapovalov. So go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, and I should know. So definitely curse on this podcast. So don't feel like you have to censor yourself. Any curse words are more than welcome.
Oh, yeah. The F-bomb gets dropped on the regular with me.
All the times.
Shit, fuck, thanks God you told me. Fucking shit. Let's go.
Carry on.
Okay. Whew, relieved. I just want to say this, because there's been a lot of work done just before Asia. And then basically we started a trial with Sam just before Osaka a week. Then I done final there. Final in Moscow, and then and then it was pretty good. But then the more time I was spending with the team, the more I was practicing and experiencing stuff with him. Then I had 1 month in California, then Australian Open, and so slowly I just started to feel more and more that okay, I think actually this is not something that I want. This is not something that I feel comfortable with. And this is not something that I enjoy.
Why?
Because like you mentioned, the energy. Because we, I think there was miscommunication, like communication, in just communication-wise, it wasn't good enough for me. Because I'm somebody who needs to have also fun with my life and on court and enjoy and feel free.
I need to feel free with whatever I'm doing, and I need some support, mm-hmm. mental support, and I just didn't feel anything of that from him.
One of the things that I saw that you had spoken about in the past was that, and you were quoted in saying, is that you felt there was a lot of ego on his regard as well, and a lot of I, you know, speaking about himself as opposed to you. And that does drive me crazy because obviously I've done a bit of coaching myself. I obviously was a player for a long time, and I hate when coaches say we or, you know, and they make it about themselves. This is about, sure, the coach can make a huge difference, but the player is the one that has to do the work and do what you've asked of them. And so I think that was one thing that I read that you had quoted about saying.
Yeah, I did say that. And it's not only towards him, but like in general, there are a lot of coaches out there like this. And I just hate this in people also in general. I don't think it's normal because I, as I said, I think the whole team, whether it's tennis coach, fitness coach, mental coach, you know, anybody in the team, they need to work for the player to achieve what they want. They all discuss what they set up the goals and they work for it towards, and they help and support player. They don't try to put the player down or destroy the player, or, you know, so that's simple as that.
I mean, for me, it's like such an important thing. I think what you're saying is that you want to work hard, you want to do everything that they ask of you, but in the end, you want somebody who's going to be see the glasses half full and to try and push you to be better, but to actually make you socially like have a life as well, like a good, not a good life, not like partying, but you want them to actually enjoy working hard every time and have that good energy with you.
I do believe that every person and every player is very individual. And the problem comes, I think, that some coaches, they used to do their work in a particular way and they do it with everybody in the same way. Mm-hmm. And I hate this. And I don't think it should be like that because everybody is absolutely different, personality, physically. And so you can't just, you know, you got to adjust. Mm-hmm. You have to adjust, not the player. Mm-hmm. Because this is how I play. This is how, and I'm doing 24/7. I wake up and I try hard and I want to improve. And it's obvious. And you know that. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing everything that you asked me for. But, you know, you got to think a little and, you know, adjust a little more to me and try to help me, you know? So, because maybe sometimes because of that ego, you don't see that stuff, maybe. I don't know.
Well, this is my last thing I'm going to say on it, because I think it's super important you point that out, that every player is individually different with their personality. And you have to, as a coach, because I've had to do this, adjust to those different personalities. One might be getting someone to see the glasses half full. One might be getting to see the player realize that their glass isn't quite as full as they think it is, you know, and sort of push them in different ways. But also, I know you and I've always, you know, pulled for you. I've always hoped that you've done well. And I have to say, when you turned up with Sam, I was like, because I'm not a big fan. So I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm kind of happy now. I just hope you find a coach that pushes you to be great when you come back.
Yeah, I just had to, I'm going to give one example because I also, I worked with Dieter Kindelman. He was my coach right after he stopped with Maria Sharapova. He was with her for 3 years being her sparring. Mm-hmm. And then my agent called me up and said, okay, you're looking for a coach. He's available now, so try it out. And he wants to be a coach now. So I was his first player that he coached. And then what happened, we started in April, and then during French Open, he would almost lock me down at the hotel, and we would practice every morning at 8 a.m. offside, 2 hours, grinding like crazy. And then he's like, okay, now you eat and you go back to the hotel. I'm going to stay at the courts. You stay there the whole day, and we're going to meet up for dinner. And I'm like, okay, so 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. And then, you know, it's like right now I'm on a lockdown. That's how I felt back then. So I already had this experience. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but I mentally can't do this. And there are a few exercises that Maria was doing, with all my respect, and we're actually good friends with her. But like, I just physically don't think I should do it, and I can't do it. But then what's the problem is that how he reacts to this. Mm-hmm. He starts to accuse me that I'm overweight, I'm lazy. You know, this is, and so that was him and, you know, another coach similar. That's what I don't like. And I have no problem to work hard. But again, because I'm not Maria.
I mean, this is like Tinder, or like Tinder for like coaches. It's just like, you got to swipe the right way, man. Come on.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with your worldview, you know. I think some people, and I think it is about ego. And I think for some people, all they want to do is make a player follow a particular plan or have their way be the most important. But what's amazing to me is the more we talk to players on this show, and obviously what our magazine is a lot about is talking about the humanity of the players a lot more than people who are machines who go and hit tennis balls. And it's always a delight to me when we talk to somebody who feels constrained by too much structure, somebody like Lina, who doesn't want to take the funding from the state and do exactly what her coaches say, because she knows that that's not how she's going to play the best. And what you're talking about, and what you described as understanding how people are special, is really meaningful, because it means that their success looks like a lot of different things. But it has to be fueled by joy and by engagement. And you can't beat somebody into submission and make them, maybe you can make them a champion, but you certainly can't make them a happy person by doing that. And I always like when players understand that or seem to get it.
Yeah, no, I do believe in nowadays, or like in the world, anything you do, you have to be happy and enjoy what you're doing. Otherwise, you're not going to get any results out of it. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not going to regret it. Maybe I bounced, like I didn't take the best coaches out because of my whatever personality, but I can't. When I think this is great that I have this luxury of choosing with whom I want to hang out, with whom I want to spend time, work out, who I want to practice with, who I want to be my coach with. I think it's luxury, and I feel free. It's like I can choose.
This episode of the Racket Magazine podcast is brought to you by Sergio Tacchini, revitalizing and disrupting the status quo since 1966. Follow them on Instagram at @SergioTacchini_official and go to SergioTacchini.com for more. Enter the promo code RACKETMAG at checkout and you'll get 30% off your order.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I think, Nastia, you've seen a lot of players come and go. You've seen a lot of great players come and go. You've seen some of them when they have gone, that they're socially not so equipped for the rest of their life, right? So I think it's super important that socially you're able to function in a normal world outside of the tennis bubble. I think that's something that people don't really understand. It's like a traveling circus, you know? And you even touched upon it, like, what do I do without tennis? Has this period in your life with the coronavirus and no tennis, has it kind of made you think about what do I want to do after tennis?
Well, I should be doing that. I should be probably thinking, because, you know, time goes fast. But I don't know. Right now, I learn how to live in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I know, because I've been, actually since a little girl, I've been always going in the future. Like I always, like, you know, when I was 17, I always expected myself, I was looking at the others. I'm like, okay, but she's there. Like, I want to be top 10. I want to win. And I'm not in the present. Just like, so now I want to try to enjoy what I have right now, what I'm doing like now today, and okay, maximum tomorrow, what I'm going to have for breakfast. But I was like, when I had 2 years ago, like, and last year, this period where I wasn't sure what I want to, like, continue playing tennis or not, I was thinking like, okay, I was in a really bad condition with myself. Like I came to the point where I wake up and I don't want to do anything. And then I would take a list of paper. They say it's good to write the things down, like what you want to do and achieve. And I would sit there for 30 minutes and I couldn't come up with anything. So then I was like, okay, wow. So that's going to be tough, you know, like it was a really tough moment, but I'm happy that I'm out of it and I'm actually enjoying every single minute and day of my life. Maybe with TV, and because I like people, I like the energy, I like to exchange that, and I like to communicate with people, and you know, maybe help somebody with something, with my amazing advices about life. And
I mean, you're still so young. Like, you're so young still, right? You're only 28. I mean, players are playing until they're mid to late 30s now. So, you know, maybe you've got another 10 years. I don't know. I mean, this is certainly adding a year to your career, this situation we've got going on now. But yeah, I think that is the one thing that players don't think about enough, because you're so in the moment. I mean, I was so in the moment when I played, but I always sort of dabbled doing TV or doing stuff in the media because I knew that I did like it. So it might be something that you can consider now, like weaving it into your career, even though you're trying to be very serious and, you know, be top 10 and maybe make a final, win a Grand Slam, which you're very capable
of. Yeah, I do want that. Like I'm super hungry right now, more than ever. And I still, because of the times has changed a little, right? So we see a lot of players like Serena and a lot of players that over 30 and they're still in amazing shape. So that gives me also a little like motivation and pump, it, like, so I can still go on. And, you know, I'm still in my 20s sort of like, and I've got a big experience on tour, and yeah, I'm hungry, super motivated. And I think, you know, I want to try to go for some more.
Just to kind of tie together some of the future stuff, but also some of how you're philosophically kind of dealing with your game, understanding yourself and looking at what your goals are. It's really interesting to me that you're involved in the WTA leadership. And I wonder what that's sort of taught you, but also maybe what you're teaching them or what you're bringing to the table there, and how you are thinking about shaping the sport, not only for yourself, but also for other players who are going to come after you.
For example, right now, I'm trying to think of players, low-ranked players, because, you know, it's not easy when you sit at the table. The first thing, whatever we discuss, you always compare it to yourself. How would you react in the situation? And it always comes to you like, okay, I would do that. I would feel. So, you know, it's always about you, the first thing, the first reaction. But then I'm like, hold on a second. Like, there are other thousands of players on tour behind you and higher than you. So you gotta, that's the thing, you gotta change perspective and look at the whole picture, at everybody. So you try to take top 20 and below 100 and in the middle. So that's the thing. I'm trying to think of right now, how can we actually help low-rank players? Because this is a really extreme and bad time, mm-hmm. especially for them, not only for us. And so I try to talk to other players and have some ideas. Just, I think our structure, I would change our structure, the calendar. I think it's crazy. Like I always say, there is no other sports that have this crazy schedule. I think it's not healthy and it's not mentally healthy.
No, it's way too long. I mean, it's physically, mentally, and I think also for the audience, it's hard to know where to focus your energy.
Yeah, right? I think fans, they get confused. They're like, and even like, I remember I posted, I have some assistant with my social media, but anyway, like they proposed, let's do the calendar. You're going to post on your Instagram what next tournaments you're going to play. And we posted like, Lyon, Indian Wells, Dubai, Doha, Lyon, Indian Wells, Miami, Charleston. And I get comments like, do you have time for life? Like all this kind of, it's true. So basically
did you answer no?
No, exactly no. I'm resting in the plane when I fly to the next event. But it's true, like 7 weeks in a row, and those are all very big tournaments. So of course it's tough. I can't afford to skip that many tournaments.
Yeah. I think what I'm hearing from you is that you actually are thinking about others. And isn't that nice to hear from somebody on the tour?
Yes. I try to think about others.
Yeah. Well, that's really nice of you. I'm glad that you've matured into a caring human being, which, you know, sometimes doesn't happen on the tour, I've got to say. But
no.
I mean, aside from, you know, I want to still ask you what your goals are outside of taking care of everybody now and worrying about other players and obviously getting back onto the tour. You know, we're hoping that once this, you know, this coronavirus gets under control, we'll be all back playing. And what are the most important goals for you, like going forward in your career? What would you like to achieve? And now that you have this great perspective.
I mean, I want to win as much as I can, titles, grand slams, and I want to be number one, of course. I know it's like a cliche, everybody is saying that, but I really want it now. Like, actually, you know, I was catching myself before that I was always ambitious, but I guess not fully, not 100%. I don't know. I'm going to try to explain. It's funny because like I was doing things well, but then, you know, 3 days, but then 2 days, so. And then I won it, but then I'm like, no, that's okay. No, today I can skip it. So it's like, it was never really 100%. And I think that's the biggest problem we had with Patrick Mouratoglou when he was my coach. Now he took me, I was like 16 years old till 18. And Patrick is very ambitious. And of course, like he wanted a lot. And when I was 17, so I did this semifinals in Indian Wells. And all of a sudden I'm 27 in the world. And you know, so then of course, like all the team and him, he's super pumped. He probably thought at 18, I'm going to be number one and winning Grand Slams, but it didn't happen. So not only I had a lot of pressure on myself from that, but also I was always down on myself because I wasn't achieving expectations. I think back then I was always like that with off court and on court. Like I want it, I'm doing it 100%, but not really, you know? So, and where now, I think probably with my maturity and getting older, I finally realized and I appreciate and value tennis much more, mm-hmm. because I was never, you know, and even now, like all the girls, they complain about the season, how long it is. But at the same time, when you take some tournaments off, they start to complain, why you took them off? We lost jobs. We need, you know, so it's like, it's too long or or you want more?
So I always say that I think sometimes players, when they go on court, they have a conscious and a subconscious, right? So the conscience is always saying, I want to win, I want to be this, I want to win this title, I want to beat this person. And then there's the subconscious going, yeah, but I don't know if you're ready for that right now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Are you really good enough? Can you win this semifinal of this Grand Slam? And you're kind of having this like conversation with yourself where your thoughts don't align, right? So I'm always like, when your subconscious and conscious meet together and say, yeah, yeah, you're going to win this. We want to fucking win this. We're going to win this. It's like, yes. And I think that's when you find that you have the success, because you actually believe that you can win those big matches, like a semifinal of an Australian Open, for example, that you actually believe it wholeheartedly. And do you think that that's starting to align now a little bit more in big matches?
Yeah, I feel much more comfortable playing big matches now. I feel good out there, and I feel stronger and more confident. Just, I think also my physical part was missing before, you know, because I do believe that to win a Grand Slam or to win something big, or, you know, you need a combination of everything. A bit of luck, a bit of like a good draw for you, because there are certain players that you hate to play against and certain players that you find to play against, you know. It doesn't mean you're good or she's good or she's bad. It's just this like a combo. Then, yeah, exactly. And I do believe that, of course, not only mentally prepared, you got to be physically prepared. Everything has to align. And of course, that subconscious and conscious. But also sometimes before, like I was playing quarterfinals at the Grand Slams, and then all of a sudden I feel comfortable because I feel like it's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why should I push for this extra when I'm young and still upcoming player is still good enough? So just, you know.
Is it not wanting to have the pressure? Is it not wanting to have the pressure of the spotlight? Because you also know and have seen what winning a Grand Slam, for example, has has done, right? Is that part of it? Is it a little bit of being afraid to have the success?
Yeah, could be. Yeah, absolutely. There's also like a reaction.
Well, change that. Just
kidding. That's what you were talking about in terms of all the expectations, both from, you know, outside coaches, from, you know, training. Having a ton of expectations really is something hard to grapple with. And I think like maybe it's a defense mechanism for not getting too emotionally invested and then too hurt if it doesn't happen. So you say, it's good enough. I made a semi. It's good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I'm playing well. Yeah. The player played better.
I always had this pressure that I have to, I need to, and it was killing me. Like it's tough to, I couldn't really enjoy because every time you play, it's just like, you gotta do better, you gotta do, you know. And also coming from a Russian family where your dad was your coach and super strict, it's never good enough, never. Mm-hmm. Even if you win the tournament, my dad would come up to me and say, yeah, but your forehand technique, you didn't do it properly here. Your swing wasn't, I'm like, okay, you gotta be kidding me. But you know, this like that's how we grow up in Russia, and it's never good enough. And so, and also, so I was putting this pressure by myself as well on me, and I was comparing myself, which thanks God I don't do it anymore. But I have to be honest, I was comparing myself to other girls and a bit older, my age, and I was like, okay, but you know, that's the worst thing you can do. And so, and sometimes you also had matches where you wanted too much, that all of a sudden you got so tight because you wanted too badly that I couldn't separate this. I want so much and what I need to do to win this match. I just couldn't separate those. So yeah, I think I've experienced a lot of stuff on court, but like now I think it's a bit more clear in my head what I want, what I need, because because I think also I was playing tennis because I had to, because my parents wanted me to. And my dad saw me that I was good and he was pushing me real hard. And when you're 14, I was number one in juniors when I won Australian Open. Mm-hmm. And all I care about during that final was this kangaroo that I'm going to get, you know? So I wasn't realizing what I'm doing. Like, I just knew how to hit a tennis ball. So I was doing it like automatically, but, you know, and I didn't know what I need, why I'm doing this.
Oh my God, I would know what to do with you as a coach. I would just buy you a stuffed toy and put it over in the corner of a court and be like, Nastia, don't worry about the check. Don't worry about winning. This is going to be yours at the end of the match. That's it.
Oh, it was the best. It was the best present ever. No, but yeah, my point is that, you know, I wasn't realizing why I'm doing it for. Mm-hmm. Why? Because my parents want me. But actually, what it gonna bring me in life? You know, what after what I'm gonna do? So what? But now, okay. So I think that's the main thing, is to know why you're doing this. What do you want? What is your goal? Then when it's all clear, you try to think, okay, who I need to help me with this and what I'm doing and stuff like that. So I think, yeah.
Good. And now it sounds like we have a good pro tip for whoever your next coach is for what helps you get motivated. You know, stuffed animals.
It might be different now. I'm thinking that Nastia might need like maybe a Gucci purse over there.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm no dummy. I see you. So I'm just thinking, you know, you can have this, which is important. It's goal setting. And sometimes it's simple things to actually, you know, make it micro, right? Instead of macro, you go, just think about that. You know, if you win, you can go shopping. And it does help you take away sometimes the pressure of the enormity of something you're trying to do, which is win a Grand Slam.
Oh, absolutely. Our life, I'm not complaining, but that's a very tough, it's a hard life. The traveling we're doing, the sacrifices we're doing, we barely see our family, we barely have a normal life and friends and stuff like that. So, I mean, of course, we win a lot. There is a lot of positives from that, a lot of benefits, but, you know, like, people have to also understand, and we do sacrifice a lot. So, you know, it's good to definitely need something and somebody who understands how to take the pressure off, because there is a lot of freaking nerves and pressure every time you wake up the day of the match, and you're always nervous. It will never go away unless you're immediate. I'm sorry, but exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
and then you start drinking like me, and then because you know you put 30 years of nerves on yourself first, so you just.
By the way, I was also at, because I mentioned I love fashion. So you're right. Now it's not stuffed toys; it's Gucci and stuff like that. But yeah. Also, red wine is always a good idea. Yeah. A good French red wine. So. Yeah,
I had one almost an entire one last night for you. So there you go.
we should have done it all together.
There you go.
Right now. Cheers.
Hey, I'm not going anywhere. So you're happy to call me anytime. FaceTime me anytime.
Get Renee in the hour. And happy. It's always 5 o'clock at Renee's house. Yeah. I would come over for breakfast, and she's like, "Hey, you want to?" Like, it's 10 a.m. So tap the brakes.
We want to say thank you. I also want to say. Now that you said that tennis is a hard life, you are on the road, you are away from your family. Well, you are spending a lot of time with your family right now. So enjoy it and don't complain about it.
I know. Well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. Thank you, girls.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nastia, I love you. I cannot wait to see you somewhere down the line, somewhere. I'm super interested to see who you bring along in your team, because I think there's no question you have the talent to win that Grand Slam. We've seen a lot of one time we've seen a couple of random Grand Slam winners over the last few years that we thought, wow, that's crazy. And there's no doubt that I think a lot of those players have given inspiration to players like you, that you can do it. So I want you to start believing in yourself a little more.
Yeah. Inspiration and frustration.
Yeah, exactly.
Cheers, girls. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you again.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye. And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Rogerian and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.